This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
I can't 3 years it. Old for marketing now.
3 years, 289 interviews we've had. That's quite a few, I would say. 144 countries, 100,000 viewers each time. Not bad.
Not bad.
But let's go, let's go, let's go. Guess what? Our first interview is with Melissa Hobley, who's the CMO of Tinder. And she's coming to VCon. She knows all about Indianapolis. She's going to teach us all the things in Indianapolis. But today we're going to talk to her about the power of community. She's an expert in love. She's going to throw down some insights. She's at Tinder and has been there for about 8 months, but she's been in the category for longer than most. She'll tell us a little bit about that too. And she's a go-to on the Today Show on the topic of relationships and tech. Welcome and thank you for joining us, Melissa.
Guys, happy birthday. Thanks for having me. I can't wait for VCon. I don't know where to start. This is like the best day to like kick off my my Tuesday. Thanks for having me.
We love having you. So these go so fast, Melissa. We're going to get right into it.
Awesome.
Before we go into the power of community, I think, you know, Tinder's on such a cool journey from my perspective. And obviously so many of the people who are watching right now are very aware of the brand, given its importance in culture. Just for fun, what are one or two things for the people that maybe haven't been keeping up with it or, you know, aren't looking at the app every day, given where they are in their life cycle with relationships? What's a thing or two that people don't realize about Tinder May 9th, 2023?
I love that question. So one is, an estimated 40 to 50% of relationships start on an app for heterosexual couples. For LGBTQ, it's as high as 70 to 80%. So dating apps are driving a lot of love, a lot of connection. And what you may not know about Tinder is that 40% of people on Tinder are looking for something serious. We have a fun reputation and we're definitely that, but there's so many people looking for love around the world on Tinder. And by the way, Vayner's been an awesome partner of Tinder's in getting that story out and getting people to look at us in a slightly
different way. I think that's an interesting point. When I think about like marketing and branding and then just common sense of life, the amount of people pre-internet, pre-apps, pre the cell phone that were in their mind going to a bar to hook up, you know, which is a human thing to do.
Yeah.
That ended up meeting the person that they married for 40 years was very, very, very common. I would argue, you know, obviously, you know, I would argue a shocking percentage of the marriages in the world, whether done on the internet or in real life at a train station or at an office, that both parties weren't both in the mindset that like, hey, within the next couple of months, I'd love to be, you know, to find my spouse. Obviously somewhere, obviously right. There's plenty right. of people that both are, but I always thought that Tinder was, you know, I actually remember arguing this at South by Southwest a year or two after Tinder got really big. We used to do these jam sessions. And I actually argued that Tinder would be the biggest marriage site in the world. And my argument was that the internet and technology, all it does is scale what is naturally happening. And I felt that naturally in life, what was happening was many people were just looking to go on a date or two or to have, you know, a casual relationship, but then ended up falling in love with the person that yeah. they were doing that with.
By the way, you're totally right. So many people are like, I'm not sure what I'm looking for. I don't know. But I want to make connection, real connection, and real community starts with that one-on-one connection, right? And so you are right. There's a really interesting study that came out of the UK and researchers, I believe it was the UK, researchers went back. It's not a Tinder study. And it looked at a really interesting insight about connection. And that was, this is so interesting, an explosion in interracial marriages. Mm-hmm. And they were trying to understand, what is the cause of this? Why did we go from here to this unbelievable jump? And by the way, I'm in an interracial marriage. I care deeply about understanding the drivers of why do we like who we like? Why do we marry who we marry? What are the cultural forces at play there? And the ingredient to that was Tinder. The ingredient this explosion in interracial marriages is Tinder. And then researchers went back, and MIT Review covered this just 2 months ago. Is that still the case? Do we think Tinder's playing that role? And they confirmed again it was Tinder. And part of the power of that is you show up on Tinder, and first we want to affirm who you are. Are you straight, gay, short, tall, whatever that is, it's awesome. What are you looking for? Whatever you're looking for, that's great too. You might be looking for tonight. You might be looking for forever, or maybe you're not sure. That's great too. We're going to have the technology to support that. And so many people, that's turning into something more. In fact, one of the ad spots that's getting a ton of traction and some virality on TikTok is a spot that's like, when you matched on Tinder, you thought it was just a one night stand.
Yeah.
That turned into two night stands. Get it?
Love that.
Get it?
Very clever. Real quick, Marie, this is not pre-recorded. I see your question on Facebook. We are live. It's May 9th, 12:07 Eastern time. All right, Melissa, let's go into the concept of this third year anniversary of Marketing for the Now, the power of community. You've had a very successful career as a senior marketer. You are admired by many of your contemporaries. So I would love to get your subjective and strategic opinion on this. When you hear the power of community, where does your mind go? Within the context of your current role, but even maybe even broader for brands that, you know, may be selling batteries or coffee or sneakers or timeshares.
Yeah, I love that. Listen, I think community is such a critical, critical ingredient in our life. And we're not even aware of that. When you ask someone, wow, I saw that you were at like, the high school basketball game this weekend. What was it? And oftentimes they'll say, oh, well, I like the competition of it all. Or maybe I went to high school there. It's really what they're getting to is community, is feeling like you're connected around something and the power of what that does in our lives. And it, you know, it doesn't, Gary, you have such an interesting, unbelievable career. When you think about the moments that are really, really so positive in your life, that I bet that all comes back to this idea of community. And, you know, my world for over 6 years is studying that and working with the most famous and impressive social anthropologists, psychologists, sociologists, researchers in the world, academics, professors, people identifying and discovering new species, and how did they connect and what drove that? And the role that community plays in our lives is one we don't get enough airtime to. So when I was talking to your team about this subject, I'm like, oh, I get so jazzed and so moved about that. And in my world of dating, you know, dating's one of these things where like people are like, I hate dating apps. It's so hard. And by the way, yes, I'm an executive at the biggest dating app in the world. And I can say, I get it. Dating is really hard. But yeah, when you put yourself out there, you're building that community. And by the way, everybody feels that way. Everybody feels like, oh, I'm a little bit nervous.
Nobody wants rejection.
Nobody wants rejection. But when you do it, it's really tough until you find your person. And then
it's ROI positive.
Worth it, right? Cool.
Yeah. Of course. Quick side note, as I continue to interact with the community that is here, Tatiana D is razzing me. I wasn't speaking to Melissa. I know she's saying to me, Gary, make sure you know your guest's name. I'm very aware of Melissa's name. What I was saying earlier, Tatiana, was Marie was in the comments asking if this was live, and I was answering that. So just to give you a little clarity on that. Melissa, parting words as we go into the next guest. What should the entrepreneurs here that are trying to build community think about when building community?
You know, it's that outreach. It's that first message. I give people advice all the time on how do I build connections on Tinder? And I say, ask questions. So, you know, I like to give a little piece of advice is whether you see an app that you like or a profile that you like on Tinder, or you see someone that's a leader in your own community and you want to learn from them, is ask the questions. Hey, I'm really impressed with what you've done. Could I pick your brain for 2 minutes on a Zoom and get your take on how you got there and what that is? I think curiosity helps drive that. And Gary, I think that's a testament to some of the things that you've done in building relationships with notables from all these industries around the world, is asking those questions and ask people to share what they know and what they've learned. So thanks for letting me come on and talk about this. I love it. I can't wait to come out to VCon. I'm from Indiana. I'm a Hoosier. So I was probably the person most excited. I'm like, I don't care what this session is on. Gary wants to get people together in Indianapolis. My family's going to be there. So
I love it. Melissa, thank you for being on. Have the best day.
Have the best day. Thanks, Gary.
We love it. All right, we're going to bring up Melissa Grady-Diaz next, the global CMO of Cadillac, and actually a friend of the other Melissa. So we got yes. a lot of Melissa love today.
I was so excited.
We're Melissa, so happy to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Melissa, how are you?
Doing great. How are you?
Good. I'm going to jump back into the comments real quick. One more time. Yes, this is live. To the gentleman who just said I was in Miami last night, that is correct. I took a flight right after the Knicks game. You did see me there. I'm very upset, but I am in New York, right by Madison Square Garden, which is actually right there. But we are here with Melissa. MGD, talk to me about the power of community from the perspective of you and your incredible career, and then maybe also from the way Cadillac likes to think about it.
I'll start with Cadillac, and I think it really like ties into my career too. When you look at what community is, and it's just like when you talk about showing up in culture, right? There are so many similarities. It's really about authentic connections. And I know the other Melissa was really talking about that as well. And it's so important. And as we look at where we are in the world right now, it's how people connect. And Cadillac, one of the things I love about working on this brand is when I say I work at Cadillac, people love to jump in and tell me their story.
Stories, yeah.
It's inherently, right? It's such an amazing thing. And so let me jump to my career quickly, and then I'm going to jump back to Cadillac. When I look at how my career has really developed and a lot of the opportunities that have been some of my favorite jobs, they came through a connection saying, let's have a quick conversation. Did you hear about this? And there is just this incredible community as you're going through your life and your career that really gets you where you are. And one of the things when people ask me for career advice, the thing that I always say is, never turn down a conversation. You just don't know where it's going to lead to. And the human connections that we build, whether it's in our career, our personal life, everything, are so important. And I think Melissa said it, we don't even realize how important it is. We don't realize how much we're looking for connections. As people are saying something, we're like, oh, let me tell you about my thing with that. It becomes so important. And coming back to Cadillac, where it's such a beautiful, beautiful thing with this brand is, the stories about Cadillac and Cadillac's place is really about the American dream and the people's manifestation of the American dream. And so when you look at how that just builds an immediate community among people, it's just it's an amazing place to be able to work.
Do you think, I love what you just said there, like Cadillac was, and it's like, heyday of heydays, every brand ebbs and flows. It was such a symbol of the American dream. Like there were like a stunning amount of humans growing up saying, if I can one day own a Cadillac, you know? Do you believe that when a brand builds such an iconic community around such an emotional attachment, that it's always re-sparkable? I look at Crocs. Right? I look at Furby, the toy. When something is as big as those things are, if you contemporize the media, the marketing, the product, there's always a chance because there's so much emotion there. Is that something that y'all think a lot about? You know, obviously the brand's doing great. Like, there's very few brands that have ever achieved the status of what Cadillac had in the 50s and 60s. Like, is it something that is thought a lot about? And like, strategized around? And I guess this question is going for a lot of the it's a very interesting show. We have tens of thousands of very senior marketers watch the show. And then we have a lot of people in the private equity world that are looking at buying iconic brands. And then you have a lot of startups that are looking to create that moment for the future. I was curious about that from a Cadillac lens.
So 100%, and that's where we start with everything. We were going through as we're moving into EV, because it's a whole new era for Cadillac, right? Yeah. And it's for automotive. And when you look at that transition, as we were moving into EV, we said to ourselves, we asked this question, which honestly changed everything in my head. And I think for a lot of people, if Cadillac vanished from the world, what would be missing? And if you think about that, the answer is a symbol of the American dream and an American icon. And when you look at that placement and the emotion that people have to it, that's exactly what we're tapping into as we move into EVs. And so we're already seeing that story shift from where we were into today of when you look at Lyric, how do I get my Lyric? I mean, that vehicle is absolutely amazing. And when you look at the EVs we have coming, so I think you're right. You've got to stay true to what makes the product what it is. And once you have that, and what makes the brand what it is, because brands are living things. They have a DNA. And you really can't escape it. And to try to change it just doesn't really work. But by tapping into that and looking at that, there's such a beauty. And as we look to the future, it's really resonating with people.
I like that. When do you think in your career, as you were coming up the ranks, at what stop or what boss do you think really nailed this concept of community for you? What product, what marketing campaign, or what boss do you think had the biggest impact on you saying, huh, this is not just making pictures and videos and running media and getting people to buy a thing, this marketing thing. There is this level of community that is a really tangible, meaningful part of the equation.
You know, I think my biggest first lessons in community came in my early days at Motorola. You really see that with newer technologies, that people get really passionate about it. And as we were looking at different things, as we were bringing different software to market, you can either ignore the community, you can ignore the comments, you can ignore the haters, honestly, which is something that I think a big lesson for me that I've always taken forward is listen to what your biggest detractors are saying. Who's most angry? A lot of them are like that because they're so passionate. Talk to them, figure out what's going on, figure out how to fix it. And that's how you're going to get people to really get to that love point. And there was a lot of opportunity when we were rolling out some of those softwares and phones to like really tap in and learn that lesson. And I think it's true today. I'm constantly on social communities, looking at what people are saying, listening to people who are messaging me, and hearing, because there's a thin line between love and hate. And by understanding what's frustrating people, you can really like, exactly, yeah.
I'm fascinated by, all my businesses, and obviously as a public figure over the last 15 years, like I have so much empathy and compassion and understanding when people are pushing back or are mad, or even when people are nasty to me. I'm able to understand that it may mean that they're not in a good place right now and they're upset about something I said that might have triggered an emotion. A lot of people are taking things out of context. They don't have the full view of it. We live in a world now of micro information. People jump from a 7-second clip to a complete full observation and belief on someone. That's leading to a lot of people's anxiety. Final thought, you as a consumer, where do you like to consume information that lends itself to maybe bringing you into a community? What are your favorite consumption forms, whether it's traditional media like print, radio, television, or modern like a TikTok or a Spotify or something of that nature?
Yeah, there's a few places. I think my favorite is just conversation. I really like to talk to people. I like to understand what they see coming. And then, I definitely look, I'm a secret Redditor. I go onto Reddit and see what people are saying, because you see a lot of good, real conversation there. Yeah. And then definitely in all the like more traditional social channels as well. So I like to, and podcasts as well. I love, listen here, see what people are saying. I think that's another really, really big one for me.
This was a lot of fun, Melissa. Thank you so much. I hope you have a great, great spring and summer, and see you soon.
Thank you. Great to see you.
Thank you, Melissa. All right, Gary, we're super lucky to have the CEO of Forever 21 up next, Winnie Park. She comes with 20 years of global experience in merchandising, marketing, digital, wholesale, retail, and e-commerce across all kinds of categories. So happy to have you here. Thanks for joining us, Winnie.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be with y'all. Gary, happy birthday.
Thank you. 3 years old. I think we're walking and maybe even like consuming harder foods. So we're really happy over here. Winnie, let's go right into it. When you hear the power of community, give it, you know, I was thrilled that you were going to be on. You know, I grew up as a retailer first, and so much of the way I think about marketing comes from a lens of retail. For you, when you hear power of the of community, where does that take you? Like, what's something worth sharing? What was interesting to you, or maybe even something that you started off your career not realizing and now is like a major belief?
Gary, I think community is actually everything. And I think it's everything today as we look at what it takes to be meaningful and authentic as a brand. In the old days of fashion retail, you could basically tell people what to wear and which tribe they were going to be part of. And today, you know, customers and we as people really want our brands to speak culture, and we want them to communicate a sense of belonging. And I think you said something earlier about an emotional connection, and that is absolutely spot on. And the journey that I've been on with Forever 21 since I started, you know, a little over a year ago, is tapping into how do we unleash the power of this brand and go beyond traditional retail and fast fashion and move into a dialogue with the customer that is authentic and creates a sense of belonging and community. And for us, I think that when we go to the heart of what we've been to Gen X, you know, millennials and Gen Z, we are really an ally in their journey for self-expression. Fashion is a means to self-express. And so how do we actually open ourselves up and become that, as opposed to just another place in the mall where you buy cheap and cheerful things?
Right.
Right. And so that's the journey we've been on. And when I think about community, you know, it didn't go far. Like, I started and I walked into this amazing community at Forever 21 of creators, designers, makers, and honestly, true creatives that brought these ideas to me. Right. And I said, let's just make it happen. Let's empower you to do this. Last year, we had employees who wanted to celebrate their own Latin heritage. And they brought together a collection. We did not sanction it. We did not say, hey, you know, go make this happen. They came up with it. They came up with a beautiful collection. They created the product. They shot the campaign. And they went out and talked about what it is to be a creator and a creative within Forever 21. And we got such a massive response from our customers because they could also see themselves reflected in our employees.
There was a level of authenticity that is just very hard to replicate in other environments. Couple house calling things. One, it is not my actual birthday. It is Marketing for the Now's third birthday of the show, but I really appreciate everyone who's leaving a comment. Speaking of which, if you're on LinkedIn, Facebook, and YouTube, your comments are streaming here heavily. A lot of you have not said hello yet, so a quick one. Please leave a comment right now if you're watching the show of where you physically are in the world, city and state. Back to Winnie. Winnie, you came in about a year ago, right?
Yep.
Let's talk about walking into challenging environments and trying to harness community. I have a lot of empathy as an operator to the retail environment that you're walking into, the state of the economy, right? Absolutely. You know, what is a leader at the highest level? Obviously, this show has a lot of CMOs, but we have a high percentage of CEOs. There's a whole different game that you have to play than our fellow CMOs here. Really, the buck stops with you. It's all on you, every aspect. How do you look at community as, you know, potentially a trigger to accelerate some of the vulnerabilities or opportunities? And do you, and really, even maybe to just go completely left field, because I think a lot of people get a lot of value out of this.
Yep.
When you walk into a new situation during tough times, you're a wartime general, not a peacetime general.
Yes.
What's the process to audit the opportunity?
You know, I think that the first thing is to lead with curiosity. And for me, it is the curiosity is both within the company in terms of what does our culture value, who's sitting there as our employees. What are they talking about? What is relevant to them?
And then for us, the journey we've been on is to turn the paradigm upside down and say, I'm actually at the very bottom of the pyramid and our customers at the very top. So when you are with a fashion company, you often just focus on the trends that are out there. And instead of really stepping back and saying, what are our customers saying? What do they care about? What are they passionate about? And how do we enter into an authentic dialogue with them? And so for me, actually, never waste a crisis. You know, if there's an economic headwind, let's really dig in and turn up our curiosity and turn up our curiosity around why our customers ascribe to us. What is their sense of belonging and community? And again, for us, it was hitting that finer point, especially with our youngest customers out there, Gen Z. They really wake up, you know, rocking Y2K fashion, and they may go to bed rocking preppy or goth. They express themselves through so many different dimensions. And that really is the language of fashion that we speak. How do we lean into that? How do we go even further? And so for us this year, it is how do we build natural connections with them and, quote, meet them where they are, end quote. That is what I say all the time. Meet them where they are. Don't superimpose. So for us this year, we launched an amazing partnership, for instance, with Rolling Loud. It's the largest hip hop festival in the world. And instead of just being another sponsor, right, and with another pop-up, I think the question for us was, how do we activate? How do we activate with the founders? And how do we do things that are genuine and fun and interesting? So those are some of the steps that we've taken to really like bring this to fruition. And leading with curiosity, getting super curious about the customer, leaning into their culture and getting involved.
I you know, it's funny. I saw the Rolling Loud thing. I've known Tarek and the crew for a decade from when they were doing tiny shows. I've always been a fan. And I think you bring up a really interesting point that is enormous in fashion and I believe is not being used enough in other consumer products, which is the power of the collaboration of communities.
Yes.
When I saw that from afar, I was like, that's a nice win for both audiences. I think it gives a cool factor for F21. I think F21 brought a lot of new awareness to Rolling Loud. I call those collaborations a 1+1=11.
Love.
And so I think that was really, really well done. With 2 minutes left, are there other community collaborations you're thinking about? And is there a scenario of too many or is there not? Because in reality, these are niche micro communities. And a lot of times they're not even, 90% of the people just that are watching this right now might have never even heard of Rolling Loud. So you can still do something with Great Adventure. You can still do something with BMW or Bose headsets or Hershey's. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think it goes back, Gary, to who's your customer and what do they care about? And it may be micro for the rest of the world, but super important for them. And so, you know, just along those lines, we're doing stuff that doesn't necessarily print money to really engage in community. For instance, our partnership with Shop City and Roblox.
Yep.
You know, for the youngest Gen Z customer, they start at age 9. They spend as much time in the metaverse as they do in real life. And Roblox has 47 million players, you know, and people are active in the community, many of which are super young, below the age of 16. So what do? We show up where they are. Again, meet them authentically, create a sense of belonging. And for us, you know, that opportunity of being in shop sitting and having creators create their own Forever 21 has been amazing. Bringing bigger brands like Barbie into that community last year was amazing. We're doing it again this year with Barbie, with the collaboration we're doing with them. So this is a clear win-win-win where 1+1=3. And again, you kind of harvest an opportunity for the future. Like if I get any type of awareness and resonance and connectivity with a 9-year-old today, think about what they could be for us tomorrow.
I think about it every day. Winnie, thank you so much for the value you brought today. Have the best week.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you, Winnie. All right, Gary, now we're going to talk travel and bring up one of my favorite brands, Virgin, but specifically Virgin Voyages, the cruise line. And we have Nathan Rosenberg, who's going to join us, the chief brand officer Hey, Nathan.
Hi. Oh, no. Ahoy.
Ahoy. Ahoy. He's been with Virgin for a while. He was part of the founding crew for Virgin Voyages. I just went on one, and I have to say, I was blown away, and I'm not part of the typical audience that would ever think of going on a cruise. So I give you my thumbs up, but I'll let you guys take it from here.
Thumbs up.
I just want to know where the cake is. If it's a birthday, someone's like the marketing company's birthday. Like,
I have a different question. Are you wearing this Miami hat to rub in all the pain I have?
Yes, 100%. I'm sorry to take you on, but I just had no choice.
I know what to do with that.
I can just literally talk like for the next 10 minutes by myself then, if that's how much it hurts you. I really do apologize. So it's lovely to be here. Thanks for having me, Gary and Andrea. Obviously, incredibly excited to talk to you about Virgin Voyages and the crazy journey we've been on over the last number of years. Like, obviously, coming out of a pandemic is not easy when you're in a cruise line. But I think for us, as we're sort of seeing the world recover and people get back to travel, it is a really, really cool time. And we're delivering, I hope, experiences people are falling in love with every single day. So that's sort of the goal we've set ourselves anyway, to try and make sure it's a really great place. And now Andrea loves it, and we have to get you on board at some stage, Gary, please. Even with my hat on.
Even with your hat on, brother. Very good. Very good job. A lot of people, when I go off screen, when my feelings are hurt in sports, don't know what to do. I appreciate your gift of gab. Let's take advantage of that here in this meeting. Talk about an observation I have. So I've been on, I think, 3, maybe 4 cruises in my life. In my early days of my wine YouTube show, I actually did something for 2,000 to 3,000 of the viewers where we did a cruise for 4 or 5 days where we did wine thing. It was just amazing.
Yeah.
All 4 times that I've been on a cruise, I had a very, very clear takeaway, which was, in that 5 or 7 day window, the humans that were on that ship immediately, 48 hours, 24 hours, 12 hours, became a micro community in itself for the time that they were there.
Yeah.
Many of which then took those serendipitous relationships, different than when you meet someone at over dinner or at a sporting event, because of the amount of time you're together,
yeah,
something happens in a week where I know I had dinner actually recently with a business friend whose best friend in the world, best couple's friend, was a couple they ran into on a cruise, became friends, and it came back home. Oh, I remember now. One of the couples is moving to the city of the other couple. This was a business friend, and it was because they met as friends, and the friendship is so powerful. And their kids are older now and getting out of house. They're, one of the couples is moving. And I've always just thought that the cruise environment was conducive to creating very powerful communities in the micro in a very quick time. Thoughts? Am I right? Am I wrong? What do you see?
No, 150 bajillion percent, basically, because there is an opportunity, because you literally are stepping across a breach and then you're heading out to sea. And there's this really transformative aspect of being in a world where you're effectively part of a larger group of people and you're looking for connection. Like, our brand, particularly Virgin Voyages, and Andrea can tell you more about this, is conviviality is the heart of this. Connection and community are the core of every experience. The best moments you'll have on board our vessels are when you come together in smaller and larger groups to sort of feel that vibe, basically. So we hear stories all the time about people who have now best friends, or people who've met someone they've fallen in love with, or someone they decided to split up from and someone else they've fallen in love with, because you have that opportunity going great places and doing great experiences for it to really sort of drive connection.
I love that. What does this audience, and this will be watched over and over and over over the next 6 months, what is the, I think people are going to be curious about this, because obviously I think the your industry was incredibly affected by the COVID realities and was at the forefront of the news in the beginning. So I think all of us are kind of like curious. I myself are like, what's the state of the union of the industry, and which communities are coming back first?
Yeah, well, I think the state of the industry today is actually really strong. Like, I think compared to where we were 2 years ago, I think all of the cruise lines had a record Q1, basically, when it came to bookings. Travel is back.
Record Q1 for bookings by
pre-2019, basically. So back
pre-2019.
Yeah, we literally had our best quarter we've ever seen, which is, you know, great for us, because obviously the thing is we are a premium product. We charge a little bit more for our experience because we are an elevated adults only experience. You know, we have lovely restaurants on board that are Michelin star curated. There's like you can shake your phone for champagne on board and things like that. But that notion of travel is back. And I think now what's happening and really excitingly is people are kind of happy to get out there and they're looking for experiences. This is the thing, Gary, that's really important, that people go, I don't just want a basic generic holiday. I had to deal with so much rubbish for 2 years, you know, stuck in my home. I want to go somewhere that when I come back from that experience, it feels like I'm different. I've learned something. I've met new people. I've tried things I wouldn't do. And that's what we are very, very focused on, in making sure that this is not just a cruise product. And yes, cruisers came back first because they love the product. But the job at Virgin Voyages is to say, yes, we love cruises and we've got something new and different for you to try. But if you're a non-cruiser, here's a product from a brand that you know and love that you might have seen with Virgin Atlantic, or you might have tried and stayed at a Virgin hotel, or you might go to space one day on Virgin Galactic. But this is it on a ship, basically, and all those lovely things from design to experience to an incredible, brilliant crew. Like, let's, and Andrea can tell you more about this as well. The people on board, the crew, who are the people that actually deliver that experience every day, are where we spend a lot of energy and time, because that's what creates the connection. They know how to bring people together. They know how to create special moments. They can sort of see the vibe and the energy and create that. And that's what's really important to us, is taking care of our crew so they really take care of you, basically.
I love that. What about when you program the cruises? How much do you think about micro communities, like the, you know, I'm a wine enthusiast, or, you know, I'm also competitive, so like as many little games on there as possible, like, you know, movies or things that from a programming standpoint, how much is emerging or established communities a part of it?
There's a sort of sense of both operating at the macro community level, which is we have this thing we call the emotional arc journey, basically. So we know effectively what it's like when you step on board and the mindset you have. So you think about it, you know, you're traveling to Miami, you're getting on the ship, basically, you've been through MIA, it's a disaster. Like, you're exhausted, you're stressed, your bags are crazy, you can't find anything. So we know that first night is about sort of bringing the energy down so you don't feel too crazy. And then over the next 3 to 4 days, we let that sort of build up and you become a little more relaxed and chilled. So that's the overarching programming thematic. And then we use passion points that we know that are interesting to our audience, which is absolutely food, which is why we're sort of famous for food. Absolutely brilliant entertainment. If you want to see a Broadway show, go to Broadway. But on our ships, we've created entertainment that bring people together and connect them through music and style, etc. And then ultimately, if you just want to chill, there's a well-being stream as well. So we absolutely use those to stream programming across all of the different passion points adults have today.
What about from a marketing lens? Obviously, as the chief brand officer, what platforms, distribution channels, television, print, digital, social, are you seeing bring you the most value as an opportunity to tap into specific communities?
Online video is the most powerful thing because it captures the vibe and the energy. And so what we did in Q1 this year is there's this sort of industry standard where you produce an ad, which is show pictures of ship, show pictures of people having a good time, put supers on it, and then kind of run that ad on TV. And I think for us, because we know people are sort of energetic and there's a vibe on board, we actually used the history of Virgin to recreate a music video and use Karma Chameleon, which is a song that was actually from Boy George and Culture Club that Richard signed 40 years ago. And sort of that brought the red thread through from Virgin and our music history, and then actually showed the vibe. Like, we weren't there saying, here's 25% off, that'll get you a great cruise. It was like, no. It's just epic on board. You should come and experience this so you don't miss out, basically. So there is a traditional approach in some things. So we'll do a lot of online video through the YouTube, etc. Where we saw incredible success was on TikTok. Literally, the song got ripped that we recreated basically with a new artist and effectively created a dance challenge. And we ended up with almost 100 million impressions that drove almost higher conversion and actual engagement with the brand, because we said consideration is the thing that's most important. 100%. How they get to the website doesn't matter. When they get there, we have to sell the drink.
Was that a big eye-opener for some of the traditional marketers?
Yeah, it was actually, even my CEO is going, I don't know what this TikToker thing is, but it's working.
We need to do more. Brother, yeah. Thank you so much. It's always great to see you. Take care of yourself.
Bye. Bon voyage.
Thank you. Thank you, Nathan. Bon voyage. All right, we're back to retail, Gary, back to your homeland. We've got Sarah Zarel, who's going to join us, the CMO of Chinese Laundry. I just love Sarah. She is truly gifted at helping organizations scale, and it doesn't matter if it's startups or legacy businesses, but we're so excited to have you here, Sarah, and love that background.
Oh, thank you. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much, Andreas. Thank you, Gary. It's such an honor to get to chat community with you guys today.
Thank you. Before we get into it with you, Sarah, I just want to give a huge shout out to the community that's been super active during this episode. EZ, the Kid CG, Kathy S, Danny Sanderson, Maddie Huggins, who's a Vayner, family member, is in there. But just really, really keep it going. You're dictating some of my questions. Thank you for being a part of this, Denise Tyler and more. Sarah, I think for a lot of people, Chinese laundry could be something that might be new for their radar. So why don't we start for a minute? I'll give you the floor and tell everybody what that is, and then we'll go into our Q&A.
Yeah, so Chinese Laundry is a leader in the footwear industry. A dress shoe company is how it started, and now we are moving into casuals. We actually have four labels in total in our fashion house. Chinese Laundry is the one that people know the most. We also have Dirty Laundry, CL by Laundry, and 42 Gold that, interestingly enough, hit four different demographics. So I get the both the honor and challenge of building four communities for four different types of audiences.
Actually, let's go into that. To your point, you've got a portfolio, four different communities, four different products, but I assume, and I'm sure you're gonna agree with this, what the real challenge slash opportunity in 2023 is, even within those four different brands, there's probably 20 to 30 meaningful communities from a psychographic, demographic, financial, you know, gender, race, interest graph. Talk to me about the matrix of that. And then I have a really interesting question about portfolio management that I think can help a lot of brand holding companies out here. But to that point, do you see it as four different communities, or am I right or am I wrong in that even within the brands, like Dirty Laundry may have 6, 7, 8, 12 meaningful communities that you want to go after?
Yeah, there are, I mean, the audience is so vast and we have so many different SKUs and styles of footwear that will allow our audience to express themselves every step of the way. And so, yeah, we're targeting, you know, for CL by Laundry, looking at like moms, flight attendants, interior designers. It's a comfort shoe that comes in wide. So it really is a shoe that you can wear at the beginning of your day when you're packing lunches, all the way through your day at your job at the bank, to picking up the kids, to coming back, to then going on date night with your husband. They're really like a shoe for life, if you will. But in that, there's so many different demographics, especially all throughout the country and the world, of where these shoes would be applicable, because they're good for work or good for play. You know, Dirty Laundry is kind of this like edgier, was intended to be a junior's line, but we really see it kind of spanning the demographics and skewing older as well into people that just want kind of more of that like grunge kind of feel that's a little bit edgier. And that brand in general, we're really leaning into. We just did a whole heritage campaign that explores shoes throughout the ages and the moments. Yeah, the moments.
Okay, I was doing that really for Josh Martinez. He just said, I do 10 push-ups every time Gary does air quotes. So I just really want him to do 500 of them. So I'll just be doing this while you're talking.
And
TCG Bulk Kings has a credible question. How does one pick out the different cohorts for marketing purposes? I'm having a hard time figuring out how to understand and select those ideal personas. That's an interesting one for you, especially given your portfolio thoughts.
Yeah, it's challenging. I think that there's no perfect cohort that you can pick out. And it's kind of like throwing spaghetti on the wall. Like for the example with CL by Laundry, right? I'm like, okay, where could these shoes be applicable? What moments does this make sense in? And then what's the profile of that person? And then how can it be replicated to hit different audience and different cohorts? And then we look at, you know, Chinese Laundry, it's been a brand for 40 years, right? So I'm not just targeting a younger demographic.
40 years.
40 years. Yeah, I feel like he needs to do 40 push-ups.
Yeah, okay, got it.
Celebration. Chinese Laundry's, you know, been around for 40 years. So there's people that are still wearing their shoes, that they were their first pair of heels. And now they only buy Chinese laundry. They've been buying Chinese laundry for the last 40 years. And now they're getting their daughters and granddaughters into it. So that when it comes to picking out cohorts, right, it's a very, very wide, a wide swath of people and customers. And so then, you know, to piggyback on what Winnie was saying, it really is like meeting your customer where they are and creating meaningful content that they identify with regardless of age and socioeconomic status. And so kind of what we're doing at Sells Brands, which is our parent company, is leaning into like the moments, right? The moments that you have, that you need to have shoes on your feet for, and the feeling that you get, right? Like the nostalgia of a first kiss at prom in your like sparkly heels. And like, how special is it that your mom also wore Chinese laundry to prom? Cool. And what a beautiful moment you then get to have with your mom to go buy your first pair of heels. And so building community around that. And, you know, I've been with the company for a year. And so I was really brought in to come in and revitalize and, bring fresh life and a fresh perspective.
To that point, because I've been a fan of the Holding Co. and have looked at, you know, I believe that organic social right now is the most misunderstood opportunity in all of marketing because of the TikTokification of all of marketing. And now organic reach, for the first time ever, relevance is now creating consumed reach, which is a profound marketing, you know, understanding. What you've been brought in, how big do you see the opportunity of organic social at scale across the seven or so platforms that are most relevant of consumer attention as a meaningful strategy compared to, let's say, 5 years ago?
I mean, I think that organic, right, with the whole shift with paid, it's like you can't take those performance dollars and guarantee that it's going to turn into an ROI that makes sense.
Well, so, to your point, you're referring to, just to help everybody, the iOS 14.5 update, which trackability in that CAC and LTV for people that sell direct to consumer, it got a lot harder, and the creative is now a much bigger variable for success.
Yeah, 100%. And so, you know, for us, and I think for any company that's trying to gain traction and grow, like I'm growing, three of our four labels didn't have social platforms when I started. So I'm in the process of growing them from scratch. Like, we just separated and gave them all their own website. So I'm getting to go in and really almost treat some of these brands like a brand new label and really build the direct to consumer narrative around them and the community. And I think it really goes back to that, like meeting people where they are, like giving them what they want. And I think that organic is of paramount importance because it's what people are paying more attention to, right? There's been so many ads, there's so much noise.
What about the consumer insights? I think for us, the reason I think we're the leader in social marketing is, it's not just we understand the platforms and the culture, we call that PAC. Mm-hmm. It's not only, like Tyler said, we call it SOC, strategic organic content, not Happy Tuesday or it's May 9th or yay. But it's the consumer insights that we're able to extract out of very smart creative that meets those cohorts. Has that been a part of the thinking or an opportunity that you see?
Yeah, I mean, I love to dig into the data. I think it's really important to see like what's getting the clicks, what people want. I mean, I'm seeing that our less polished content, right, on TikTok, it gets higher engagement, whether that's just us at the office, you know, goofing off and talking shoes and doing something silly. Oftentimes is better than like a well-produced, you know, video. And of course we need those fashion videos in on our website and in other places. But when we're trying to get organic shares and we're, you know, trying to go viral on different platforms, it really is that like very relatable content 100%. Where people can see themselves in those shoes and it feels like something that they can obtain.
Sarah, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you.
Before Andrea comes on and we get to our last guest, I want to tell the community, the Lisa Matthews, the Dale M's, the Youssef Cheblis, the Carol Duckham, the Naveen S. I need all of you to comment, just like we did earlier, on where you are on your current favorite brand. I want to see everybody who's watching right now on LinkedIn, Facebook, and YouTube, and others, current favorite brand. Just want to get some of that insight. Andrea, take us home.
All right. We got one of my favorite brands coming up. It's Claire's. We have the EVP and CMO, Kristen Patrick, joining us. I love Claire's because my husband got his ear pierced with my daughter when she was five. They made a little agreement. If she could wait until she was five, they were going to do it. But just one more thing about Kristen. She joined Claire's not too long ago in 2021, but the roster of brands that you have worked on globally, I'm not even going to go hit them all, but listen to this, you guys. PepsiCo, Playboy, NBC Universal, Disney, Revlon, Gap, and more and more. We're so happy to have you here closing out the show.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
How are you, KP?
Hi. You know what we did work on together was the Mike Tyson thing too.
We did. That was incredible. You know, to Andrea's point, you've had an incredible career sitting at very senior levels of some of the biggest brands in the world in many different sectors. What's the connective tissue across all those different brands when you think about the framework of this conversation, the power of community? What's a takeaway that is true across the board? And what are some of the subtle differences when you're in different sectors or different brands?
I think the connective tissue for all of the businesses that I've worked on is the importance of culture and tracking cultural trends. Like every single one of those companies relies on being first to the market in terms of trends, entertainment, content, and sort of being on the leading edge of all of those. And so I'm really attracted to companies that do that. So I think that would be the link to everything.
And what about the differences out of all the brands you've worked on, whether it's a Playboy or a Pepsi, or currently a Claire's, what in that Rolodex stands out as like, wow, that was an incredibly passionate micro community for that brand. And I'd love to hear it because there might be some double clicking into that might be able to help people.
Yeah. Listen, any company that I go to, I try to understand what the consumer is interested in. And I call them lifestyle verticals. So it may be, you know, sports was really big for Pepsi. Music was really big for Pepsi. You know, for Claire's, gaming is really, really big for these, for the generation that we're pursuing. You know, the metaverse is really big for them. So I classify them by lifestyle verticals. And then we create strategies from a content perspective around each of those verticals. So it and that changes from company to company and consumer segment to consumer segment.
What's been the biggest transformation in marketing from the day you started your career, you know, and with all your big ambitions to where you sit now from the form of distribution? Like, you know, obviously we've had such a big transformation with the growth of the internet. Where do you think we are in the cycle of that? And like, what were the biggest disruptions to that? And because I think that has a huge impact on building communities. If you're marketing where people can't hear you, you're gonna have a tough time creating a community. If I'm giving a speech in an empty hall, I have a really tough time, even if it's the best speech I've ever given, of getting any ROI out of that. From a distribution standpoint, what have you seen in your illustrious career? Like, what's been the biggest changes?
I'm gonna talk about, I think, what a lot of companies are dealing with and facing as it pertains to that distribution strategy, right? So it's like suddenly companies would create, you know, three or four television spots a year. They now have to create like thousands and thousands of pieces of content a day to put across that distribution channel. It's like you've got YouTube, TikTok, BeReal, and a lot of companies are struggling with that. And so, you know, I think that what the distribution pipeline has done, it's made brands need to become publishers of content, and that's not their first business. And so, you know, we dealt with it at Pepsi. We ended up building our own content studio. It's like there's always a need for agencies, but to be able to develop and create content is a really difficult task for brands and businesses because it's not the first thing that they do. Their products are the first thing, their services, and then all of a sudden now you're a publisher. And, you know, it also creates, I think, a lot of issues for brands in that, you know, if they put something out and it's not well received, then they have to sort of deal with that as well. So, and a lot of companies that I talk to are really struggling with this.
What about the role of influencers to build community? You know, just thinking about the businesses you've been on, influencers have been such a important change, fame, micro fame, you know, obviously, you know, spokesmen and women have been iconic for 80 years in advertising, but now instead of it being 20 to 50 people that are in play, right, for every Kevin Hart, who's, you know, a modern famous person who's in a lot of commercials, you have hundreds of thousands of humans who are making $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 a year doing influencer work, all the way up to the bigger names that are making millions. You know, what do you think about influencers' role in community building?
I think that it's absolutely critical. And I think that you have to really understand your consumer. And again, sort of going back to lifestyle verticals, I think that you can classify the influencers that you want to link the business with based on what they're interested in. So for Claire's, for instance, you know, we're doing things in gaming. And, you know, our consumers interested in design, our consumers interested in style. So it's like finding the influencer within those lifestyle verticals. And I sort of use that lifestyle vertical classification to help guide us towards influencers. And then, you know, I think that there's tiers of influencers. There's sort of the A-level celebrities that you partner with. And then there's the sort of micro influencers that you have to partner with as well. So anytime we do a strategy, it all starts with that lifestyle vertical classification.
What about parting thoughts here? We've got a minute or two. What do marketers or entrepreneurs or executives here need to know about the power of community? Give me a subtle point or something that's obvious to you that may be obvious to others, but what's the most obvious point to you and what's the most subtle point when I talk the power of community?
Listen, the power of community for me and for Claire's right now is really about driving ideals and movements. And that is really, really important to Gen Z and Gen Alpha. And so tapping into that community for information and knowledge and leveraging it and giving them your platform to speak on, I think is what's incredibly, incredibly important. And if you don't have sort of the love and the support of your community, I think today, like, I don't know, you're sort of dead in the water. That community creates the momentum necessary, I think, to drive businesses today.
Kristen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Team, I want to take the last minute here on the show and really just thank this community, our community, the Emmer Inspires, the Rodrigo V's, the Tommy BFPV, the Joshua Martinez's, and on and on and on. Andrea, you, the team behind you, the Summers, the many people that have 3 years into this show. I remember the first one was hardcore COVID. I was sitting on a bed in my room. And it's been a great journey. And most of all, just reading all the comments, reading on the Discord. Big shout out to all the VFriends community. So excited about VCon. Next Thursday, we're kicking off. So we'll talk about a community. You know, just it's so empowering to be able to bring value to your community. The amount of people over the last 3 years that have reached out and said, this show has helped them like get an interview, helped them say what they said in the interview that got them a marketing job, inspired them to get into marketing, decide to go into marketing classes, change their career in marketing. It's been really an enjoyable journey. And just, I wanna say thank you, Andrea, for spearheading this project, to all the VaynerX employees that have helped it, and to the hundreds and hundreds of best marketers in the world. It's been really fun to see how much the organization and the community and the B2B community, and most of all, the people that I'm reading, Michelle McDonald, Righteous Monkey, Jonathan Peer, like our community getting value from this. It's been a very fruitful journey.
Yeah, I mean, this is, it's been such a beautiful experience, and we're here to serve you. So if you have ideas and you want to share things, you know, keep coming our way, because we want to make sure this is indeed marketing for the now and things continue to change. So it's a beautiful thing that we can continue to just share whatever that we're seeing and learn a lot from you as well. Thanks so much, Gary, for all that you bring to this.
Have a wonderful, wonderful day, everybody. vcon.co, if you want to go to the greatest business culture conference of all time, that is next week. vcon.co. I'll see a lot of you there next week. Thank you, team. We'll see you next time.